phenomenal beings with the power to communicate. Review movies and television. Bring you the news and say things funny. Streaming to the internet at the speed of light, 96 KBS. For the next few hours, the superhost, Anna May, mistress of the doors. Dave with a unique perspective. And their core mission, right that which is wrong. Educate the ignorant and say things funny. You can join the show on the website at geekworldradio.com. Begin.
Hey guys, you're listening to Geek World on Indie 100, The Point in Alave. We are your superhero superhosts, Anime, Mistress of the Dork, and the man who never stops talking, Dave! Don't forget, if you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email to geekworldradio@yahoo.com, and be sure to check out our website, geekworldradio.com, for all the great stuff that's there. Check out all the stuff on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/geekworldradio. Be sure to subscribe, we've got awesome stuff. So,
yes,
today's show is an interesting one. You know, we've been doing some weird topics lately.
Yeah, and, well,
I think we have another one.
We've got to keep it fresh.
Yeah.
You know, this is going to be a fun topic. So this week is all about WTF sequels.
Yes.
These are like the sequels to movies where you're like, what? What are you thinking? Either they recast everybody or it follows a new character or the plot has just gone so upside down that who knows what's happening anymore.
Yeah, these aren't ones that are just by their nature bad.
Yeah.
You know, there's plenty of bad sequels.
Certainly.
Are the ones that was like, what were they thinking? Like,
yeah.
How did that pitch meeting go? And I think the perfect example of this is one that Key and Peele did a sketch on.
Yep.
That it sort of epitomizes this whole topic. And the movie that I'm talking about is Gremlins 2.
Gremlins 2, yeah.
Yeah. So you want to...
Yeah, well, I mean, there's... Certainly, I think that's definitely one of the things that inspired the show was, you know, rewatching that sketch, and it's so true, you know, I mean, Gremlins 2 is a perfect example of a studio being like, we're going to make so much money doing a sequel to this movie,
mm-hmm.
And essentially, you know, the original Gremlins was sort of this, like, kind of scary, dark horror movie, but also kind of for kids,
yeah.
Right? And it was, you know, it was really kind of touching, but also kind of freaky and different things, and it's kind of a classic. Gremlins 2 is clearly trying to sell a toy line.
Yeah,
Gremlins 2
it's
is
off
like,
the rails.
Is off the rails. Like, literally, the whole point of it is to be this big, goofy, comedic thing for very small children.
Yeah.
It's not scary. It's not... it's not at all dramatic.
No.
Really, it doesn't even have much of a plot, per se. Really,
yeah,
it's just
really.
Kind of little jokey things about each different version of a gremlin.
Yeah.
Because now, instead of, like, you know, just gremlins that dress kind of weird or wear sunglasses or something that differentiate themselves, now they're different, like, totally different genetic types of gremlins.
Yeah, so... So what happened in this one is, you know, what's his face?
Gizmo?
Gizmo. God, why could I
not
remember that?
Wow, do you want to explain this or you want me to explain it?
So Gizmo's owner, his original owner, has died.
Yeah.
And Gizmo has ended up in this lab.
Yes.
And he's kind of not being treated so well.
No.
And at some point, he ends up getting water on him, which spawns a bunch of other little guys who eat after midnight.
Classic.
Who become gremlins.
Yes.
Like, and
one of them's Mohawk that tortures Gizmo a lot. Yeah,
And then they drink some serum
yep.
in the lab.
Yep.
And they become
Mutant gremlins.
Mutant gremlins.
Yeah. Teenage mutant gremlins. Gremlins. Ninja gremlins.
Teenage mutant gremlins.
Yeah. Teenage mutant. Well, it's teenage mutant bat gremlin.
Yeah.
It's teenage mutant sexy lady gremlin.
Teenage Mutant Brainy Gremlin.
Yeah, and it's just bizarre. I mean, it's so funny when, you got Brainy Gremlin, who's a gremlin who can talk and, like, strategize. You have, like, a sexy lady one with, like, big lips and, like, a tight dress on. You know, the original torturer Mohawk drinks it and becomes a giant spider gremlin.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just, you sort of... I mean, just imagine you saw the first Gremlins, right? And you're like, oh, it was about a small town and people being, like, terrorized. The small town basically being invaded by these little monsters.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, this is this weird comedy with basically all these different types of weird monster gremlins in a building in the city. And it's just goofy. Yeah. I mean, there really is nothing there's nothing terrifying about this movie. There's nothing freaky about this movie. Like, it's funny. I watched Gremlins again a few years ago, and that scene where the gremlin attacks the mom in the tree is still freaky.
Mm-hmm.
To this day, I'm like, this is unsettling.
Yeah.
And no, Gremlins 2 has no need for being unsettling.
Yeah, yeah, no. I mean, the whole thing with the Key and Peele episode is like, they bring up all the different kinds of gremlins, and it's like, it's as though someone was just like, with any stupid idea someone had, it's in the movie.
Yep, including Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, Gremlins 2, Gremlins 2 is a great example. But what's really funny about all of this, because we're not going to go on about Gremlins 2, is...
Though we should.
I can see in doing research for this particular topic, aside from just bad sequels, which there are many movies that are bad sequels, I can see why, really up until kind of the 2000s, it was always thought of that a sequel was inferior to the original.
Yes.
You know, like, we had a few times here and there, you know, before sort of, I think, the superhero boom, where, like, there were a few sequels that were like, wow, this is really good. You know, like, obviously there's Empire Strikes Back, there's Godfather 2, there's
T2.
Yeah. But generally speaking, sequels were, like, inferior, if not downright terrible. And I can really see why they got this, because we have a long list of movies, and they're all, like, a lot of these are really, really WTF.
Yeah.
Like, what were you thinking? Like, first off, like, I just gotta bring up Leprechaun 4 in space.
Yeah.
Okay? So, they just decided, for the fourth Leprechaun, to just put him on another planet.
Yeah.
You know, they just kind of go, like, you know what we're gonna do? So, check this out. There's, like, a space marine, right? And he's on another planet, and the Leprechaun just, like... bursts out of his penis.
Well, you know how it happens, right?
Oh, you know, I've never seen this movie.
So, okay, so Leprechaun is, you know, trying to marry this princess on another planet.
Nice.
I don't know exactly what happened, but space marines end up there and kill the Leprechaun for messing with them.
Nice.
One of them decides to pee on the dead body of the Leprechaun.
Uh-huh.
Leprechaun spirit goes through his pee, up through his pee, into his body.
Nice.
So later, it can burst out of his penis.
That's awesome. Well, that's the thing. I mean, it's...
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny because the thing about Leprechaun 4 and with Leprechauns is they almost get a bit of a pass in this topic because you start from a comedy base, you just go more comedy, but at the same time, it's like... they are far away from the original Leprechaun movie.
Oh, yeah.
They're far away from the whole, like, Curse of the Leprechaun. And, you know, obviously you don't want a movie to be the same thing. But, boy, by the time you get to, like, other planets in Space Marines...
Yeah.
You've gotten pretty far off the reservation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, what does a leprechaun have to do with in space to begin with?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, speaking of in space, I mean, honestly, the in space thing is a big part of what is, like, bad about sequels. Really, for me, the, like, quintessential version, sort of the alpha version of this kind of thing, this, like, super, super off-the-rails WTF sequel... is Highlander 2, The Quickening.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so you know, someone was like, you know that Highlander movie?
Yeah.
You know, people thought it was really cool.
You know that really great Highlander movie with a really dense mythology that was all explained well and made sense in the first movie?
Yeah, let's take that, throw it out, aliens.
Yeah, they're aliens.
They're aliens.
Now. Yeah, we've just decided that. Yeah.
And that whole there can be only one thing, well, there can be only one until there's not.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, yeah.
It is crazy. I remember as a kid watching Highlander 2 and being like, aliens? Like, he was a little kid, I knew that there was something wrong here. It didn't make any sense.
Yeah, and there's a reason that for the later sequels, which I don't even know how they ended up making later sequels after the second one.
Well, it was retcon.
That's the thing.
Yeah, yeah.
That could have been a total franchise-killing thing.
Yeah.
Well, somehow they managed to, like, push it to the side.
It's funny, because I feel like they... in some ways, you have to kind of admire the ballsiness of what they were attempting to do, which was totally take this franchise and turn it into a sci-fi dystopian film.
Yeah.
Problem is, it's not at all what the franchise is supposed to be. The franchise is supposed to be a sort of, swordplay, immortal fantasy film.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just like, no, we're going to have... bad Highlanders from, like, space mm-hmm. riding around on these sort of, like, they were essentially hoverboards.
Yeah.
And swords. They have swords still, trying to kill Connor. I mean, it just doesn't... It's just... It's mind-boggling. It's the weirdest decision they could have made. And I feel like whoever was involved in the original movies were far gone by the time the second one was made. I just can't imagine anyone would have signed off on this that had any interest in the integrity of the story of Highlander.
Absolutely. It makes absolutely no sense. So much of the production of that makes no sense. Like, like the swords they were using were actually 22-pound broadswords. Because of it, members of the cast ended up stabbing each other. I believe that one ended up getting part of his finger chopped off.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Also, they also just found, like, somehow just brought back Sean Connery.
Yeah,
which was also super weird.
Because aliens.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah so this one definitely, it was
nonsense.
In some ways kind of the worst, because you're just like, they already had a good thing, clearly, because, you know, somehow the thing survived number two. I think there were like two more film sequels after that,
mm-hmm.
and a TV series. So clearly it had a great foundation, but, you know, listen... There are a lot of bad ideas in Hollywood.
Oh, boy, are there.
And that's one of them. One of the ones that I was researching, which I thought was just remarkable, was King Kong Lives.
Yeah, I have never heard of that before.
Yeah, I also have not, but it's a real thing.
Yes.
It really exists.
So what is the studio pitch for that?
So like, basically, studio pitch is like, okay. So you know how at the end of King Kong, he gets killed by all the planes and dies in super tragic? Guess what? Plot twist, he's not dead.
What?
He's in a coma. But the big monkey, he needs a blood transfusion to live.
Uh-oh.
Oh, man, what are we going to do? Oh, well, actually, there is another King Kong, a lady King Kong.
Sexy.
And they're going to find... And Linda Hamilton, who, by the way, we already got signed to play a sexy lady doctor, she's going to bring the lady Kong over, do a blood transfusion, then the two of them are going to fall in love and destroy the city.
Woo!
King Kong Lives.
Indeed.
That's real.
That is...
Yeah,
Why? Why would you do that?
You know, it's one of those where you realize, like, they were stretching so much to do a sequel.
Yeah.
Like, they were just like, how are we gonna do a sequel to this?
Well, it's so... The worst part about it is that ending, it's so tragic, but, like, beautiful. It's like, that is how you end something, you know? It's like, was it sad that King Kong died? Yes. Is that the point? Yes.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
So by making this sequel, they totally take away from the tragedy of the first one. It's like...
And also just make it all so goofy, right?
Yes.
I mean, it's funny because the original King Kong, and this was a sequel to the remake, but still, like, the original King Kong, it's supposed to be... you know, you're supposed to suspend disbelief, but it is a tragic sort of metaphorical thing going on, and this just makes it... silly.
Yeah.
This just makes it super silly. This is like, you know, the 10th time Godzilla fought Mecha Godzilla or
mm-hmm.
something. You know what I mean? You're like, okay.
Yeah.
This is cool. This
yeah.
is fine. You know, I do have to mention, some of these were shocking to me because there were a few sequels, especially in the 80s and 70s, that were like, they just did a sequel with recasting very famous actors.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, like, super terrible movies. Like, I still can't believe they actually did a sequel to The Sting. That, like, really, really, like, you know, pretty important film starring, you know, Paul Newman and Robert Redford that, like, is on a lot of lists as one of the best movies ever made. They decided to just do a sequel where they recast the two of them. And instead of, like, this cool sort of Ocean's 11 heist thing, it was just about, like... the Robert Redford's character, who's not him anymore, winning a boxing match. It's like super crazy.
What was it with boxing matches?
Boxing was a big deal before we were born and when we were children.
Like,
it lost like kind of everything. It's funny because I really
so
think
many
Mike.
Sequels.
I feel like Mike Tyson's downfall was sort of. At the exact same time as boxing started becoming less and less interesting.
Yeah, it's so weird because so many of these sequels involve boxing.
Yeah. Well, because it's kind of like the perfect, like, true grit guy thing. You know, it's like a guy, you know, punching another guy. And I mean, Like, I don't want to say it's Rocky, but it kind of is Rocky. Like, there were other boxing movies before Rocky.
Right.
But Rocky was, like, a phenomenon.
Yeah.
And that really, like, became sort of a very easy way to be like, oh, you know, this is the hero. This is how the hero perseveres. But, yeah, remember that one weird, like, Elvis movie we saw where he was a boxer? Like, something kid or whatever, when he was, like, in the military. Like, what is going on here?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just a trope. Mm-hmm. Like, of course...
Meatballs or Teen Wolf 2 or...
There you go. They both have boxing, like, main characters having to... Teen Wolf 2 is what I was thinking about. I mean, that one is just weird.
Yeah.
That one is the... I believe he plays, like, the cousin of Michael J. Fox's character.
I mean... At least that one, it was a family thing. It right. wasn't like somebody got bitten and they became one. It's like, this is a family thing. It's
yeah.
in the family. So it pseudo makes sense. It was a dumb idea, but...
But it's just like, it's just really weird. Yeah. Like, yeah, I mean, I think honestly, anytime you're like, we're going to do a sequel and we're going to recast the lead,
mm-hmm.
You're already looking at problems.
Yeah.
But then when you just try to make the same movie, but change out the sport.
Yeah.
That's very bad, guys. You should not be doing those things.
Yeah.
Teen Wolf 2 is actually pretty great though. Cause it's so bad. Some of these are as much as we're going to make fun of them, they're also kind of great in their absurdity,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, you know, I'd like to mention one real quick that I'm not going to sit here and make fun of it because it's actually one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah.
But I think one that, well, there's two actually that fit this category of movies I love that fit in this list, just to be fair. But one of them is definitely Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
Absolutely.
I love Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. Not only that, I actually like it more than Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Yeah, and this isn't just nostalgia. We saw it very recently,
yeah.
and I think that both movies, both Bill and Ted movies, still hold up for me. They're still hilarious.
Yeah.
They are based on a silly premise, but they do it so well.
They're both great, but the second one is crazy.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
the first one is really weird, you know? I mean, basically, they're gonna be the saviors of all humanity because they're music, but they need to graduate so they can do Battle of the Bands, and so
they are sent a time travel machine so they can go back in time and grab some historical figures and do their
and
report.
Pass their history report, which yeah. is okay. So that's nuts, no
yeah,
matter what.
Absolutely, but the second one, the pitch is essentially okay. So you know how they did their report? Well, now a bad guy from the future is gonna send some robots that look like them to kill them and take their place so that they
yeah.
can never be the saviors. So Bill and Ted are dead, but you know what? They're dead, but they're gonna be in hell and they're gonna be in the afterlife and they're gonna find their way back. But first they're gonna go to heaven and they're gonna bring some aliens and those aliens are gonna make good robot usses
yeah.
and
oh no, but wait, how do they even get out of like hell and heaven? Well, I know how. They meet death and
uh-huh.
challenge death to a series of games.
Yeah.
And they win in Battleship,
yep.
thus being able to return to life.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, first off, I truly, truly, my heart of heart, want to believe that that's what influenced the first season of Dragon Ball, though I know it didn't. Dragon Ball Z, though I know it didn't.
Yeah.
But what's really great is it works.
Yeah.
Because that world started off so wacky to begin with,
yes.
and because they're so constant as characters... The whole thing actually works out really well, but I just wanted to mention it because it does fit in this list. It's just not terrible.
Another one that fits in this list but is actually incredible and a fantastic movie that I love is Star Trek IV.
Yeah.
The Voyage Home.
Voyage Home. I love this movie so much.
Which we always refer to as Star Trek IV Save the Whales.
Right.
Because, like, the pitch for this one is essentially, okay, you know how, like, Star Trek is in space and stuff? Well... So there's going to be an issue with these aliens coming. So the guys from Star Trek, they're going to have to go back in time to the 80s
yeah.
and save the whales.
Yeah, it's oh my God, it's such a work of genius though.
Yeah.
Because there's so much stuff going on in Star Trek IV. Like, it's very easy to dismiss Star Trek IV because it is the most comedic of all of them.
Yeah.
And it has really, there is a villain per se, but the villain is a force. It's not
mm-hmm.
anything they can shoot with lasers. But what's amazing about Star Trek IV is they found a way to take a real-life issue at the time,
mm-hmm.
which was...
Saving the whales.
Saving the whales, which was a legit big issue in the 80s. And they also found a way to basically do the thing that Star Trek did best, which was act as an allegory for how kind of silly we are in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And basically, they found a way for the utopian people who got it right to come back to our time and be like, oh, look at the Mohawks and the radios and all this stuff and how silly and ridiculous and all the pettiness of the 80s.
Uh-huh.
And they found a really brilliant way to really satirize the 80s.
Yeah.
In a just fantastic, fun way that's super digestible.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like actually kind of a great movie.
It's fantastic. It's one of their, it's definitely considered one of the better ones because it is.
Yeah, but at the same time, like, if you just watch Wrath of Khan and then search for Spock and we're expecting, like, Klingons and lasers and explosions,
yeah,
you will sorely unhappy.
Well, it's absolutely hilarious because it's like, who brought that up in the boardroom? Like, who brought that up in the writer's room? And who was like, yeah, that's a great idea, let's go with it. It's like, did it turn out to be amazing? Absolutely. But how did that happen? You know, it's a wonder.
And not just that, it was a smash hit, too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's what I think really led them to realize that they could make a Star Trek Next Generation.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was just the right movie at the right time. And wasn't there a story about, Eddie Murphy was almost in it.
What?
Eddie Murphy wanted to be in the movie.
Like, as Eddie Murphy?
No, as someone in Starfleet.
Ah.
For some reason, it just obviously didn't work out, but Eddie Murphy was almost in Star Trek. There's, like, an article about it you can find.
Yeah.
But we just wanted to mention those because they fit.
Yeah.
They do. They just happen by, like, lightning strike.
Yeah.
Kind of way actually work.
Yeah.
No, it didn't work is Son of Mask.
Yeah.
Son of Mask.
Starring
Jamie Kennedy, I think, is the other prime example around like Highlander 2 of like what not to do when faced with the task of doing a sequel, especially a sequel where you are not going to get the lead back.
Mm-hmm.
So, oddly enough, in 2005, Jim Carrey was not interested in coming back for The Mask 2. And so they decided to cast Jamie Kennedy. And basically, Jamie Kennedy plays this guy who's a cartoonist who finds the mask after Stanley from the first movie throws it in the bay, right?
Mm-hmm.
He finds the mask, puts it on, and while it's on, and this is the creepiest part. Now, I do have to say, full disclosure, I've not seen this movie, so, you know, it's just, I just have to let you know that. But hopefully you'll go with me on this, because it just seems horrifying when I just read about it. He puts on the mask, and with the mask on, consummates a baby with his wife. So imagine a big, green, toothy face just, like, going to town, right?
Apparently she likes green?
She is, yeah, she's a fan of green. And they have a baby. And the baby is born with the powers of the mask.
No.
So the baby, who is a normal human baby, who is often a creepy CGI baby in this movie, can, like, do the weird face stuff and has, like, crazy magical powers, right? Like, Loki's powers. And speaking of Loki, you know, what was really neat about the mask is you find out that the god Loki actually created the mask to make mischief in the world of man. Well, they were like, you know what we're going to do? We're going to go really into it with Son of Mask, where they actually have Loki and Odin as mm-hmm. characters in the movie. Loki, played by Alan Cumming, who, if you guys don't know that name, he played Nightcrawler in X-Men 2.
Mm-hmm.
But also Bob Hoskins playing Odin.
So
Bob
weird.
Hoskins, of course, from Who Framed Roger Rabbit and the Mario Brothers movie as Mario. and you know, to top it all off, if anyone remembers the ad campaign, they really, really just like went all in on the dog having the mask on.
Oh, yeah.
Because a majority of the trailer spots were, like, the dog running around with a mask on.
Oh, God.
So, yeah.
I remember that. That was just why.
So this was one of those examples of they thought that because the first movie was so kind of wacky to begin with, they could kind of go all out.
Mm-hmm.
Issue is, nobody likes Jamie Kennedy.
Yeah.
And CGI and they should have learned from Ally McBeal, CGI babies are scary as hell.
True.
But they didn't, and they ended up making one of the most abysmal sequels of all time.
Yeah, and also, again, WTF.
WTF indeed. And that's the thing, the entire thing is WTF.
Yeah, it's like, honestly, starting from he and his wife make a baby while he's wearing the mask.
Yeah,
like,
that's like, that's That's dark territory.
Yeah.
I'm not. So what do you think? What should we do next?
Oh, that is a good question.
I would like to bring up, actually, another one of these things that inspired this one was Smokey and the Bandit 2.
Yeah.
Okay. So we watched Smokey and the Bandit a few years ago. Obviously, we were, I don't even know if we were born when it came out or we were like babies when it did, but I hadn't seen the original until I was an adult. And yeah. I actually really loved it. It's like this fun kind of weird throwback action adventure, action adventure comedy, you know, from the 80s with you know, the man at the time, mm-hmm. Which was what's his name again?
Burt Reynolds
with a big mustache.
Look at the two of us not remembering names.
Well, he's like 109 at this point. It's okay not to remember Burt Reynolds' name. And Sally Field.
Yeah.
And it is it's just a fun kind of romp, and basically it's about this guy who's kind of a bit of an outlaw, where him and his buddy, they're basically trying to get alcohol across mm-hmm. state lines, because there's like an alcohol shortage or something. No, it's a prohibition.
Yeah.
Well, it's a bet thing. Yeah, it was a bet to get alcohol across the state
that it was prohibited. Yeah.
It was a dry state. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of like fun. So it's where the Eastbound and Down song came from. Mm-hmm. They made it specifically that movie. And so it's just kind of fun, cool, you know, sexy movie. You get the second one, right? Smokey and the Bandit 2.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to give them credit, they did get the cast back.
Yes.
So that's really impressive. But the plot of this one is they need to get an elephant across state lines to get to the Republican National Convention.
Which I guess is illegal to transport an elephant across state lines?
It must be, because, you know, that's the plot.
Yeah.
And I remember, you know, watching some of this movie a few years ago, and I was like, oh, Smokey and the Bandit 2, cool, and I turned it on, and there was this scene where they're looking for the elephant in this like dark like sort of warehouse type thing, right? And all of a sudden, the elephant comes up behind Burt Reynolds and like shocks him, and he jumps and does like four backflips and lands perfectly on the elephant riding the elephant. And I was like, okay,
yeah,
this is now like a movie for toddlers?
And that's the thing. It's like the first movie, I'm not saying that it, like, that families couldn't watch it together, but it was a comedy for adults. Like, there wasn't much humor that a kid would really get.
There was, like, a joke about him, like, he only takes his hat off for one thing.
Yeah.
And there was a whole joke about him, you know, like a sex joke that was a runner throughout the movie. And now, all of a sudden, it's like this, like, Happy Meals romp type mm-hmm. thing, which, you know, once again, like, kind of makes sense, because the reason all these movies happen, these WTF sequels and bad sequels, is just the greed factor.
Yes.
It's a way of trying to figure out how to make it a more of a four quadrant film, how to make it more pliable for families and kids to go to. And that's because Smokey and the Bandit, the first one, made a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're like, yeah, you know, it's better than $20 million, $40 million.
Yeah.
You know? And, but man, that was a shock.
Yeah.
Because ultimately what you do is you end up certainly denigrating the first one.
Yeah.
You can't help it, because it's like real bad.
Yeah. And it makes no sense. Like, once again, in the boardroom, when someone was like, yeah, and then he's going to do four flips onto the elephant. Like, who okayed that?
Yeah.
You know? How did that end up actually making it into the movie?
So I'd like to talk about one real quick before we get to... So after this one is going to be one of my favorites, but I want to talk about WTF sequel, because I think this lands right in the middle, okay? So we've talked about a few that have worked, right? Like Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey worked, and then we get something on the complete opposite side of working that's WTF worthy, like Highlander 2, mm-hmm. Son of Mask. I think something that's right in the middle, it's definitely a WTF sequel, but some people really love it, and a lot of people really either don't know about it or hate it.
Okay.
Is Halloween 3, Season of the Witch.
Yeah, yeah. So this is an interesting one, because Halloween is supposed to follow a certain character. You know,
yeah.
there's
it's Michael Myers.
Yeah. But you've got a movie that has nothing to do with Michael Myers.
Yeah.
And so, do you know the story behind
it? I do. Yeah. So basically, John Carpenter, who made the first two movies, he and his producer were like, you know what? I feel like Halloween should be an anthology series.
Mm-hmm.
We should make every movie basically it was like American Horror Story before American Horror Story.
Yes.
They wanted to make every year about a different kind of Halloween scary thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first one was a slasher flick. The first two were a slasher flick, but this one is going to be about witches and witchcraft, and it's going to have some sci-fi elements, and it's going to be in the whole movie is going to be about essentially these witches trying to kill like most of the kids or all of the kids in the country. It's like some big it's that was actually something made it controversial is there weren't a lot of horror movies that were about violence against children, and this one was like all about that.
Yeah.
And so it was this really kind of strange thing where everyone expected to see Michael Myers mm-hmm. running around in a mask and instead got a weird witch pumpkin movie.
Yeah. Now the thing is, making Halloween into an anthology series, it's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
You know, theoretically it works, and when your main villain is no longer alive,
yep.
you know, it's like, and that was John Carpenter's other thing. He's like, no, he's got to stay dead. He's dead. Like, you know, what are we going to bring him back to life?
Yep,
yes,
yep.
you are.
You are.
But before that, you're going to try not to.
and it's funny too, because, you know, I think a big part of the reason this lands in the WTF sequels is like, if they had done this as the actual sequel, the second movie,
yes.
maybe it would have worked.
I agree. Yeah, no, if you had made the second movie this, and then it's like, this is an anthology series. But when your first two are about one guy,
yeah.
and then your third one isn't, people don't get that.
Well, not just that, but it was the same guy and the same heroine mm-hmm. and the same guy chasing the same guy. Like, the second movie is like a direct
yes,
sequel
absolutely.
With everyone involved in this like, you know, in this very serialized way. And so that's what everyone thought it was.
Which makes sense.
Yeah, and so, but it's funny, because over the years, you know, when we were kids, everyone was like, ha ha, Halloween 3 is the worst, it's the stupidest thing ever. But as the years have gone on, it has actually grown in popularity quite a bit.
Yeah, well, because, you know, when it first happens, it's hard to judge it based on its own merit.
Yeah.
You know, all you can see is that, no, this is not Halloween,
yeah.
you know? But as time goes on and you can watch it just on its own and see it, like, as a scary movie, it's like, okay, let's not think of this as part of the Halloween franchise. It just happens to have that name, but it's Season of the Witch.
Exactly.
Know?
Yeah, and
not the Nicolas Cage movie, which was also terrible.
Yeah. Though not a WTF sequel,
no.
So we will not be speaking of that.
No.
Though apparently there was another Wicker Man movie that was a sequel to
the Wicker
the remake.
Tree.
Yeah, and I'm like, I'm not gonna talk about that. I didn't have
no
interest. But anyway, yeah. So I need to move on now because that one actually like. I'm not gonna say, you know, whether it was great or bad. It's more in the middle for any of them. But can I move on, or do you want to say something
no,
else?
No, I wanted to bring up another one that's pseudo-related to that.
Okay, go for it.
So, another one, and this is another one that actually falls into the territory of good, but it's still WTF,
uh-huh.
is Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, New Nightmare.
Oh, I love that movie so much.
I do, too. But this is one where it's like, this is sort of the behind where like Scream came from,
yeah.
the idea of this kind of thing happening in the real world. So Nightmare on Elm Street, you've got Freddy Krueger attacking kids in their dreams.
Yeah.
So New Nightmare is in the real world.
Yeah.
So the girl who starred in the first one, she's an actress who starred in the first movie. But after, what was it, after, like, the big earthquake in L.A.?
Yeah, because I think this movie was, what, it was 1990, I think it was, like, 1994. Yep, Wes Craven's New Nightmare, 1994.
Somehow the spirit of Freddy Krueger becomes real.
Yeah. So, I mean, this movie is brilliant. I mean, it really is. And it's funny, because I read someone doing a write-up about it, and I don't think they got kind of, they were, like, making it, like, ooh, it's meta. And it's like, yeah. It was meta before Scream.
Yes.
Was meta. Like, it is really one of the first, like, actual real meta, like,
mm-hmm.
big films. Especially, like, for horror movies. And it's super ahead of its time, and it's also so smart. Like, it's almost like too good for this world.
Yeah, well, because they actually managed to make a scary movie. Like, the concept of this creature that you know, haunts your dreams,
yeah.
That sort of, because people believe in the real world, yeah. Now it's come to fruition in real life in a way.
Well, this is the deal. Basically, the idea is that Freddy Krueger, the character they came up with, was actually based on a real demon that actually exists in the real world. That was a fear demon. And so the fear demon was being sort of satiated from these Nightmare on Elm Street movies. But once they killed Freddy, mm-hmm. all of a sudden that was keeping that sort of demon from essentially having power. And so the demon created Freddy in the real world,
right.
to seek revenge on the people that were no longer making the movies, which were Wes Craven, Robert Englund, Carrie, what's her name?
I don't know.
I can't remember her name right now. And it's the best.
It's great.
It's just the coolest movie.
It's so well done. You've got all the right people involved, and it's meta in all the right ways.
Yeah.
And it still works because it still sort of holds to what the Nightmare on Elm Street movies were, even though they've taken it into the real world.
By the way, it's Heather Langenkamp, which I did just remember.
Yes, you did. I just wanted to,
because I feel bad because she's the best.
She is.
But you know, this movie is, and I think the other reason it actually works, but it still falls in WTF, is like, it was, I think, the fifth or sixth movie. So at this point, like, it's so deep in the franchise that it's kind of hard to be like, yeah, do you ever see New Nightmare? Because it's not like the first movie or the second movie.
Yeah.
And it's also not a reboot.
No.
So you're sort of like asking people if they've seen the fifth movie in a horror franchise that, if you're lucky, they may have seen the first one.
Yes.
But it's a treasure.
Yeah.
It really is.
It's absolutely worth watching.
And one of the few times in this show we're going to talk about something good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now I'm going to go to something that's the exact opposite of that.
Yeah.
And it is 100%. Probably the second or third thing I thought of when we were talking about this subject.
Okay.
And that is, I want to take you back to the early 90s.
Okay.
Okay. And there's a lot of cocaine. There was a lot of cocaine. And you could tell it was a lot of cocaine because the first RoboCop movie and the second RoboCop movie had a lot of cocaine in it.
Right.
So I gotta assume that the people over there at that studio who made those movies were probably doing a lot of that because somebody decided, you know what we're gonna do? We're gonna make RoboCop 3.
Okay, great idea.
And then
those
someone said,
two.
That's great. Yeah, let's get Peter Weller. Nope, Weller's out. Well, how can you have RoboCop without Peter Weller? It's got a mascot. Who cares about Peter Weller? Okay, well, let's get some of the people involved. We got Frank Miller. He wrote RoboCop 2. He's writing RoboCop 3. And guess what?
What?
He wants to put cyborg ninjas in this.
Okay.
And guess what he also wants to do? This is the best, okay? You know how RoboCop has that machine gun that, like, comes out of, like, the side of his leg?
Yeah.
Well, what if he had a machine gun that was just his hand? Like, it's his hand.
So his hand
his
is...
His hand is the machine gun. Yeah. Okay? That's how he stops crime, with his machine gun hand.
Okay.
But it gets better, okay? Now, you ever watch, like, the other movies and you go, you know, RoboCop's car is really cool, but you know what would be even cooler?
What?
A jetpack. We're gonna give RoboCop a jetpack. That way he can fly around Detroit, killing bad guys anytime he wants. And I gotta be honest, the body count is gonna be huge. Think about all of the people who died in the first one and the second one. We're gonna do even more of that, and it's gonna be PG-13. RoboCop 3, everybody.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's and I mean that's in the movie.
It's
all in the movie.
RoboCop 3, which, by the way, I remember at a very young age seeing this movie, is another one of those quintessential, like, we're gonna cash out on the third one.
Yeah.
This movie is for children. So you remember the first movie where there was the guy who was snorting cocaine off the naked breasts of two hookers?
Yes.
And then a guy came in and shot him in the kneecaps and blew him up?
Yes.
Yeah. We're gonna make a kids movie two movies later. We're going to do that.
Well, it's funny because the first time I saw this movie, I was actually sick with, like, a super high fever. Like, yeah. I was essentially in the hospital, like, kind of delirious with a high fever, like, 104, 105.
Yeah.
Watching it going, this can't be real. Yeah. I'm dreaming, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not. I wasn't dreaming. Yeah. This was real. This happened.
I do have to say that there is a definitive incline in the surreality of these RoboCop movies.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you watch the first one is a landmark film.
Yes.
It's a classic sci-fi film with a super biting satire on America, American consumerism, just America on a whole. Paul Verhoeven is probably, for me, it's his best movie. So you get this first one that's kind of smarter than it should be, right?
Yes.
For something called RoboCop. But then you get the second one, which is just this dark, kind of vile, violent movie written by Frank Miller about the drug wars, and you have a guy who's like torturing people with surgery, and you have like a bodyguard who's like a 13-year-old boy with a suitcase machine gun, and you have like the OCP deciding to put a drug kingpin's brain into a killer robot.
Yep.
And feed him drugs. And it's so crazy, the second one, but somehow it weirdly works, even though it's not
as well as the first, but
yeah, not nearly as well as the first, but somehow weirdly works. And then by the third one, they were just like, nope, we are selling Happy Meals. And that's the only thing that I think makes it slightly less WTF, is you can kind of see it coming from the second one. Because the second one is just like, is so weird.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't quite fit this because it's not like, it kind of makes sense. But yeah, this last one is just like, damn. Like,
yeah.
RoboCop 3 is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
It is just nuts.
It's out of control.
Like, the fact that, like, I would have taken either or jetpack PG-13.
Right.
Like, if they had lost the jetpack and it was PG-13, I'd be like, whatever. Or if they had kept the jetpack and made it R, I would have been like, awesome.
Yes.
But no, you can't have both a jetpack and a PG-13
and that kind
RoboCop.
Of body count.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's just not going to work out.
Not at all.
Yeah. So I would recommend watching that. Because it's the best.
I guess so. I mean,
another one I want to mention real quick, but we actually spent a lot of time talking about it last week, weirdly enough,
yeah.
was Weekend at Bernie's 2.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Weekend at Bernie's 1 was one of those movies where, like, it's just bizarrely hilarious and something that shouldn't work but does.
Yeah.
And I can't even imagine at that time how many people were, like, doing the Weekend at Bernie's thing with friends, like, where, you know, they'd sort of maneuver a friend to do all their movements.
So I feel like there's a lot more we want to talk about and probably not a ton of time. So let's kind of run a little faster through them, okay? All right, so Fast and Furious, Tokyo Drift.
Yeah, Fast and Furious. So this is another one that actually does kind of work and actually helped to revitalize the series,
right.
Bizarrely. It was a movie that was sort of made as like, nah, it's probably going to go direct to DVD. Nobody's going to watch it. Nobody cares. We don't have anyone back. So, yeah.
I think probably the only reason it was in theaters was because Vin Diesel did the cameo.
Mm-hmm.
I think because Vin Diesel did the cameo, they were like, all right, well, we can sell this to people.
Yeah, and the only reason Vin Diesel did the cameo is because they gave him the rights to the character Riddick.
Which, frankly, is our next one. Chronicles of Riddick is a perfect example of WTF sequels.
But can we just say a little bit about Tokyo Drift?
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, so the whole thing with Tokyo Drift.
I thought everyone knew. I thought everyone was super clear on Tokyo Drift.
So you've got, like, the first movie that's a heist movie.
Yeah.
The second movie that's...
Well, the first movie's Point Break, but it's basically a heist movie.
But it's a heist movie. Second movie, which is, I don't know, still undercover cop stuff.
Undercover cop stuff, yeah.
Crime
thriller.
Third movie... so we don't have anyone back, so let's make it about teenagers, one who gets sent off to Tokyo and has to learn how to drift in buildings for racing,
because,
you know, fun or something, or get the girl, but maybe not, or
it's kind of
they're
like
gangsters, but who cares?
Sort of like fish out of water, kind of, but it's high school.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a weird movie.
Yep.
It really is, like, super bizarre. And it's apparently, like, a prequel to, like, the first six movies.
Yeah, a sequel.
It's a sequel to the first six
but
movies.
But it brought about one of people's favorite characters, Han.
Han, yeah.
You know? And it did get that Vin Diesel cameo in the end.
It was Justin Lin's first one. So, yeah. But yeah, we need to talk about Chronicles of Riddick, okay? So Pitch Black was a dope sci-fi horror movie.
Yeah, super
and
cool.
It really is what launched Vin Diesel. It's really awesome in a lot of ways. Low budget, but well done.
Yeah.
And
it's
kind
of like one of those where they had a brilliant concept to use to really make money stretch far.
Yeah, and you know, and then after that he did Fast and Furious, so everyone's like Vin Diesel is the new Arnold Schwarzenegger, mm-hmm. right? That was the thinking back in the mid-2000s. And so they put a lot of money into Chronicles of Riddick, which essentially took the character Riddick from this sci-fi horror movie and put him in the middle of a sweeping space opera.
Yes.
And it is a lot.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on in this movie.
They add in a ton of mythology.
Yeah.
That when I say mythology, what I actually mean is nonsense.
Yeah.
They add in all of these characters that WTF.
Yeah, it's a slog too. It's not even fun to watch.
Not at all. I've been told that the game is actually pretty enjoyable.
Yeah, yeah.
But better play the game than to watch the movie.
And also, Riddick was arguably the main character of Pitch Black, but he was also he was almost like Captain Jack Sparrow. He was in it just enough to be the coolest guy ever.
Yeah.
But once he became the central character of Chronicles of Riddick, you start seeing Vin Diesel really chew the scenery a lot.
Yeah.
And it just kind of gets grating. And I gotta be honest, Chronicles of Riddick is a tough movie to watch.
It really
because
is.
Because it really believes it's so smart and so great.
Yeah.
And it just isn't. And it's tough to watch. It's like embarrassing. It's like William Hunt or something. It's like one of those people, American Idol, who think they're a great singer. And they're not.
Yeah.
And it's tough.
Well, it's interesting because, I feel like Vin Diesel at the time knew that it wasn't right and knew that, but he loves the character so much.
You think so?
I don't know.
He thought this was great.
You think so?
Yeah. I think the nerd part of Vin Diesel took over hardcore and was like, this is a thing.
Okay.
Yeah. I believe that.
I mean, I believe that he liked the idea of being an action hero.
Yeah.
But I don't know that, I think
I think Vin Diesel is a D&D nerd.
That's true.
Who does a great tough guy impression.
Yes, absolutely.
But
100%.
I think when Vin Diesel has control over the creative side, he turns it into a D&D nerd thing.
Yeah.
I mean, thus you get things like Chronicles of Riddick, you get things like The Last Witch Hunter.
Yeah.
He's a giant freaking nerd. I mean, he might as well be like, yeah, okay, yeah. He just happens to, be able to bench press, 500 pounds.
Yeah. I mean, so, with Riddick, they brought it back a little.
They did. Riddick, the third one, I actually kind of enjoyed a little bit.
Yeah, it wasn't great, but it was so much better than Chronicles of Riddick. And
because it was, really the formula of Pitch Black.
Yeah, it made sense as a successor to that.
Let's see. All I'm going to say is Book of Shadows, Blair Witch 2. I never saw it, but that was one of those perfect examples of WTF. It was just a totally different thing.
That was an example of taking the name of something and just slapping it on, even though it has nothing to do with it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. There was no Blair Witch in Blair Witch 2.
Nope, there was nothing. Oh, by the way, I didn't mention this. One of the really interesting things about Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, is that movie treats the first two movies like they were fictional movies. Actually, one of the characters is watching a trailer for the original film in a scene.
Oh, that's
in Halloween 3.
So meta.
Yeah, super meta.
Yeah,
yeah. Which makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, not in a way, because Wes Craven and John Carpenter are two different guys. But there was a bit of that in Halloween. Remember the trailer for The Thing? Which he actually. But it's the original Thing.
Yeah.
Because he made The Thing after. Ooh, I'm getting all googly-eyed now. I don't know what's happening anymore.
So it was The Thing from Another Planet?
It was The Thing from Another Planet,
okay,
yeah.
Gotcha.
I would like to bring up something that won't be at any list you'll find, because this is a personal favorite of ours. Return to the 36th Chamber of Shaolin.
Yeah. So it's not just in America that this happens.
No, this happens all over the world.
Yeah.
So I first off, say I really like this movie a lot.
I do too.
But I think a big part of it was that we had seen this before we saw the 36th Chamber of Shaolin. Because I believe if we had seen the 36th Chamber of Shaolin first and then seen this movie, we would not have liked it.
Well, we also would have been like, this makes no sense at
all.
We
would have been WTF. Yeah. So basically, the original 36 Chamber of Shaolin is actually a movie about... I don't know if this guy is a real life or sort of a folktale hero, but essentially there's this Chinese hero that was a Shaolin monk who came down and was sort of like a hero to the everyday people. And they made a movie about him called The 36 Chamber of Shaolin, starring Gordon Liu. It launched his career. It's an awesome kung fu movie. It's one of the best ever made. And so they're like, all right, this movie made a lot of money. We're going to get Gordon Liu and Lau Kar-Lun, the director back. Let's do a sequel. But instead of making a movie where he plays that same character going around China, like, you know, righting wrongs, they decide to have Gordon Liu play a guy who's basically just like a flim-flam man, like a con artist, who can't fight at all, pretend to be that character in order to save this dye factory, this local dye factory that his brother works at, from thugs.
Yeah.
And he ends up getting beaten up when they realize that he's not a kung fu master. So then he goes to the Shaolin Temple, kind of breaks in, and then they realize that he shouldn't be there, but as punishment for breaking in, they make him fix the roof.
Yeah.
And over, like, a year-long period of fixing the roof and watching the Shaolin guys and doing stuff, he actually becomes a kung fu master.
Now, am I remembering this right, that the character that he played in the first one actually does make an appearance in the second one, but it's not played by him.
No, it's a different guy.
Yeah.
A different guy. And not just that, but that character is the reason why they allow him to stay at the Shaolin Temple.
So
it's you watch so the first weird. One, you're like,
so Gordon Liu is this guy. You watch the second one. Wait. It's connected because they have the same name, but he's not that guy. Yeah. But that guy is in this, but it's not Gordon Liu.
Yeah.
But Gordon Liu is also impersonating the guy. Yeah.
Yeah. This is another example. This is definitely a WTF sequel. You're like, what is happening? Yeah. Like, why is he playing a different guy, but then that character is played by a different guy? I'm glad I actually forgot about that. Yeah. Makes it even weirder for the third one.
The third one, which I don't think... Was Gordon Liu in the third one?
Gordon Liu is playing the character for the first one again.
Okay, yeah.
In
so
the third one.
He's back to that, but the main character in this one is some
is
teenager?
It's the guy from Mad Monkey Kung Fu. It's that guy.
Right.
There's another,
playing a teenager, right?
He's playing like a 15 or 16 year old who's like a kung fu monster.
Which is like hilarious because he's like at least twice as old as Gordon Liu.
Yeah, they don't really explain it, but he's basically, or maybe they do, maybe it's because his mom taught him, but he's basically like the Beast from Kung Fu Hustle. He's like way stronger than anybody in the world for no apparent reason. And Gordon Liu is back playing the same character from the first movie, not the second movie. That one's just a bad movie.
Oh, yeah, it's terrible.
That one's, like, almost unwatchable. I think it's called Disciples of the 36th Chamber.
I think you're right.
But anyway, back to
reality.
Yeah, back to reality.
There goes gravity.
But I do have to say, if you guys are kung fu fans, the 36th Chamber of Shaolin is a great film. You should watch it. And Return of the 36th Chamber is actually a great time.
It is.
It's a WTF sequel. Yeah. It is by no means good in comparison to the first one.
But now that we've given you warning that they are technically related because they have some of the same characters and take place in the same temple, but they're not related.
They're completely different genres. No, they are related. They're just completely different genres.
They are, but like we were saying, your main actor isn't the same character that he was in the first one.
It's the same world, though different genres. So the first one is like an action drama. It's like an action drama, and the sequel is a full-blown comedy.
Yeah.
It's like total comedy.
Totally.
So there you go. It's also called the second one's also called Return of the Master Killer, depending on where
you that makes more sense. I'm better with that. I'm better with it being called that than Return to the 36th Chamber.
Yeah. Well, but the 36th Chamber was also, I think when it first came out in America, was called Master Killer.
Yeah. See, one of them should be called something with Master Killer, and the other one should be called something with 36th
Chamber. Well, Master Killer is such a funny name. I think one of the Wu-Tang was named Master Killer. Okay, what else do we have here? We gotta talk about Jaws 4 the Revenge.
We do, yeah.
Jaws 4 the Revenge is crazy. So basically, first off, this one has Michael Caine in it. But essentially, they you know, listen, there was already like two other sequels to Jaws, so it's not crazy that they're making Jaws sequels.
No, not at all.
And Jaws 3D was also legitimately terrible. But right. Jaws 4, it goes like a whole nother level of terrible, where basically the family of the original shark in Jaws have a sense of revenge against the family of Brody. And they, like, go across a bunch of oceans in order to try to kill them, I believe, in, like, the Bahamas or something.
Yeah, so not only do they have this sense of revenge, but they can also sense the Brody family.
Yeah, they can track them.
Yeah.
So it's, like, it is
And we're talking generations down, too, because it's, like, the son. The granddaughter.
Yeah. And so it's like...
And maybe even the wife.
It's next level bizarre.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that they... I mean, we're not running into the thing where it should be like Deep Blue Sea, right? It should be like they were created in a lab with like some kind of super, scent-ish like thing.
It's funny because Orca is about an orca that's seeking revenge.
Yeah.
But that in that one, the orca literally saw this boat essentially murder its wife and unborn child.
Yeah.
You know, and so he just follows that boat, you know, and takes revenge on the people as well as it can. That is not the case with this. This is a related shark that travels across the world in order to hunt them down, hunt those Brodies down.
It's absolutely nuts. I mean, it's considered one of the worst sequels of all time. Mm-hmm. Definitely WTF worthy. It's been years since I've seen it, so I can't go too much into depth, but it's horrible.
Yeah.
It's really terrible. I did want to mention also, I don't know if you must have seen this when you were a kid. Probably one of the more traumatic moments of my childhood was watching Return to Oz.
You know, I don't think I ever actually saw it.
Oh my god. Those maniacs in the 80s decided to do a sequel to Wizard of Oz and make it one of the most nightmare-inducing, freakiest things of all time. It is terrifying. It's like Zack Snyder's Murderverse.
Did it start for Isabelle?
I believe Farooza Balk does play Dorothy. Yeah.
That's funny.
She plays Dorothy, who, it takes place 6 months after the events of the first movie, where Dorothy is forced to escape from a mental institution and finds herself back in Oz with this evil queen trying to decapitate her. And there's heads everywhere. There's, like, these evil monster creatures after her. It is, like, legitimately frightening movie.
That's...
Like, it's super weird. It
becomes a horror movie rather than a lovely musical.
It's funny because it's a real example of, like what sells today in 1985? Horror movies.
Yeah.
And they just went with that. They tried to modernize this classic thing instead of going, let's make a classic thing right now. And it's crazy. And, yeah, I still remember this day, like, always wondering if it was real.
Yeah.
So I remember seeing it as a kid and being like, it must not... I had this conversation years ago with somebody where I thought it was something else. I thought it was a ripoff of, like, Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
And not, like, an actual sequel to Wizard of Oz because it was too much.
Yeah.
And it's dark. It's real bad.
Oh, that is...
Yeah. I can't even say if it's bad. It's just so disturbing that, like, I can't even deal with it. I can't deal with it.
So let's talk about American Psycho 2.
American Psycho 2. Mila Kunis. All right, this one
William
is
Shatner.
Nuts. This one's nuts. We've actually seen this movie. Basically, Mila Kunis plays this girl who, when she's 11 years old, her babysitter is murdered by Patrick Bateman, who, sadly, Christian Bale could not find time in his schedule to come back. But basically, she ends up, like, stabbing American Psycho when she's, like, 11. So now...
Patrick Bateman,
oh my god! And the whole movie's in this VO for Mila Kunis, which, I love Mila Kunis, but boy howdy.
Where she always says Patrick Bateman like that.
Yeah. I mean, she was kind of famous in the 70s show for being, like, the hot, annoying chick, right? And so she goes full force in this movie playing a very hot, very annoying college student who's trying to be a criminology student and trying to basically become a TA so she can get an FBI job.
Mm-hmm.
And so to do this, she starts murdering all her competition in a very Patrick Bateman-esque way with a very annoying voiceover.
Oh, yeah.
That certainly worked in American Psycho because it was based on a book, so the voiceover behooved it, and not this movie. And also, weirdly, did you mention William Shatner being in it?
I mentioned his name.
You just said that, right? Yeah. It's just the worst.
Now, this is one of those cases where the reason it's so WTF is because it wasn't supposed to be an American Psycho movie.
Yeah, no, it was another script. Yeah,
based on, I don't know if it was based on another book or something, but
it was just based on, it was a horror script, an original horror script, that they decided to add American Psycho 2 to get it made.
Yeah, so they just added that beginning part about Patrick Bateman, but it was not supposed to have anything to do with that.
And it makes sense, because you watch it and you're like, it just makes no sense at all. It's horrible.
Yeah. But guys, at that, we're out of time.
What? So. What about Grease 2? Mannequin 2?
Oh, well. Don't forget,
if
you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email to geekworldradio@yahoo.com, and be sure to check out our website, geekworldradio.com. We'll be back with you next week, same time, same place. Geek World.